Support for this program comes from Petersburg Flower Farm, with delivery of fresh bouquets available. Open noon to 5, Friday through Sunday at 6 Rory's Road. More information at 907-518-4363 or Petersburg Flower Farm on Facebook.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a bit. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown.
Good afternoon. This is Daniel Tucker, your new host of In the Garden. Hope everybody's enjoying this dry spring weather we're having. Getting out, digging around, finding where your garden's at this spring. Today I'm going to talk about soils and fertility, some of our biggest challenges here in Petersburg. Everybody knows that this is not the easiest place to have a garden. There's the rain, there's the soggy, wet, peaty muskeg soil, cold winters, short, cool summers, lots of challenges. And you know, we like to blame the weather because it's beyond our control, and we do have a lot of challenges with the weather here, but oftentimes it's actually the soil that's the biggest limiting factor. I took a trip up to Hoonah last summer, north of here and west of here, and I was just blown away by the way things grow up there. And I know it rains less, but it's also cooler there in the summertime. They're farther north, they're closer to the open ocean, they get more cool, foggy weather, and yet I was really amazed by the way things grew in people's yards. Arborvitas and golden chain trees and rose bushes and a lot of things that oftentimes we see struggling in Petersburg. Up there in Hoonah, they were just huge and lush and really impressive. And what I gathered is that there's better drainage. The soil is more sandy, more loamy, more gravelly. So there's more drainage. The town isn't right on a muskeg. But also there's limestone outcrops in the area, and that feeds into the streams and the watersheds. And those carbonate rocks, the limestone, releases calcium into the groundwater, and it buffers the pH. And so it helps bring the pH closer to neutral, which is what plants really like. And for those of you that aren't familiar or maybe need a little refresher, pH basically is the acidity versus alkalinity of the soil. So a low pH means more acid, and a higher pH is more alkaline. And around here, our soils are almost always acidic because all the rainfall, rain itself is very slightly acidic. And so all the rainfall tends to lower the pH, and then plants contribute to that sometimes. The peat moss creates its own extra acidified microclimate that allows it to do its thing and create peat bogs. And so in a muskeg or near a muskeg, the pH might be as low as 4, even in the high 3s, which is extremely acidic. Much more sour than what gardeners almost anywhere else have to contend with. And then up at about 7 is neutral pH. So that 6.5 to 7, slightly acidic to neutral, is really the sweet spot for a lot of plants and shrubs and trees, really to get their optimal growth. There are things that are more adapted that can handle acidic conditions, but most of our garden crops, with the exception of things like blueberries, but you know, most of our garden vegetables and fruit trees like apple trees and cherry trees, they're really going to thrive more with closer to neutral pH. And then the higher pH values like 8, and above. We just don't really encounter those here much because you really need kind of dry conditions for that to develop. But anyways, going back to my visit to Hoonah, I was just really blown away. The rose bushes especially were really fabulous. And my point is that we like to blame the weather because it's beyond our control, whereas the soil is something that we can do something about if we really work at it. And but the soil counts for a lot. Soil counts for more than we realize a lot of the time. So I just got a soil test back for some samples that I took from my land over at Point Agassiz. And it was really fascinating. So I sent off some soil samples to Logan Labs down in Ohio. And they're a very reputable soil testing outfit. I recommend them. It was about $60 for two soil samples to be tested, plus $12 shipping. And then I had them give me some recommendations. So it was $134 in total, not counting the shipping. And it was just really interesting looking over the results because I've been growing things in this soil for a couple of years now. I've got a variety of tree seedlings out there, and a lot of things are not growing the way I'd like them to, and I'd suspected that it was the low pH, and surprise, surprise, the pH is 4.6, which is quite low, so that reaffirms my suspicion that I need to get out the lime. I need to raise that pH. Wood ash can also be a good way to raise pH quickly. Although the drawback with wood ash is that when you burn wood and you're left with the ashes, that's whatever minerals were concentrated in the wood. So unless you test the wood ash itself, you don't know exactly what minerals are in it. There's generally calcium, which is good. That's going to raise the pH. There's, you know, certainly potassium, potash, potassium, and probably a host of other things. But it is possible to have too much of certain things. And so applying lots of wood ash, you know, you might run the risk of having too much magnesium or too much of something else, which could create its own issues down the road. That said, we have so much rainfall here, and that tends to wash out minerals out of the soil that it's less likely to be an issue. So I use wood ash sparingly. If you put a ton of wood ash in one spot, you'll notice if you just make a pile or burn a huge bonfire there, you know, things won't want to grow there. It'll get kind of overly alkaline or salty. Better spread a little over a large area. But lime is really great. Just go down to Hammer's, get a bag of prilled lime. It's calcium carbonate. And so, for example, the recommendations I got for my soil test was that in terms of lime, I've got about 635 pounds per acre of calcium in the soil, and I need about 1,600. So I'm missing about 1,000 pounds per acre. So obviously I'm not going to go out and apply that all at once, though I could. But any little bit is going to help raise that pH. Even the difference between 4.6 pH and 5.6 is going to make a big difference for plants to grow. Because part of what happens is that at that low pH, when the soil is acidic, it's sour, a lot of minerals are less available to the plants. There's kind of a spectrum of mineral availability, and as the pH changes, different things become more and less available due to the soil chemistry, and I won't get super deep into that today. But at a low pH, things like iron are highly available, but calcium less so. And then at higher pH, things like iron become less available. So your problems kind of change. But in that sweet spot, close to neutral, is where the most minerals are the most available. So that's a helpful thing to remember. And I've read that actually a lot of the issues associated with low pH with those acidic soils are actually aluminum toxicity, because aluminum is very widely present in soils. It's a very common element. But at those acidic pH levels, it really can be harmful to the plants. Whereas when the pH is higher, they don't really take it up the same way. And, you know, it's kind of like how you maybe wouldn't want to drink a bunch of tomato juice out of an aluminum cup or something. Might not taste good. Plants are kind of the same way. So, yeah, I am available for calls. 907-772-3808 if you have questions or comments about soil fertility. Get on the line. Let me know. This is a good time to start thinking about these things. Plants start growing in the spring. This is a good time to apply some fertilizer, fish emulsion, other sources of nitrogen. Nitrogen is one of the main, really the big one, the big limiting factor for a lot of plants is lack of nitrogen. They need it to grow. They need it to make those green leaves. Nitrogen is the building block of protein in plant and animal tissues. But it's deficient in most of our soils because it tends to come from animals. That's why trees go bigger along salmon streams, because all those fish that get dragged into the woods and rot release a lot of nitrogen and other nutrients into the soil and feed the trees and feed the plants. So the salmon are this wonderful nutrient pump that's hauling protein and minerals out of the ocean where those things are abundant and bringing them up to the land where they get washed out and washed back into the ocean. There's also nitrogen-fixing plants, which are really wonderful, are big helpers in creating soil fertility, including the lowly alder, the weedy, much maligned alders that I hear people complain about quite a bit sometimes. They are fertilizing the soil as their leaves decay. Their nitrogen-rich leaves fertilize the soil because... Hello, you're on line one.
Hi, hey. I thought I'd direct a soil question to you.
Okay.
You know, a lot of us around here use compost and seaweed in our gardens in the fall. And I just wondered if, where does that fit into the whole, you know, acid balance, pH balance?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know the specifics, but I know, you know, that seaweed is going to have some sodium, which is going to raise the pH a bit. I think it's definitely a good thing. When I was at the Farmers Summit here in Petersburg 2 years ago, they had a soil scientist from Fairbanks with a very in-depth discussion on seaweed pros and cons, and he was a little concerned about the sodium in the seaweed affecting the soil. But I think down here, with just with the level of rain that we have, that excess sodium gets washed out, and you know, the seaweed is bringing not just some sodium but also some nitrogen and a whole host of trace minerals, because everything in the ocean, you know, in the seawater, there's like 90 different trace minerals. And so anything from the ocean is going to bring a lot of those minerals with it. And, there's a lot of things like copper and zinc and boron that plants only need a teeny tiny amount, but they do need it. If they have too much, it's toxic, but the amounts of things in the seawater are kind of balanced already, where there's teeny tiny amounts of those trace minerals like, zinc or copper or whatever. And so, yeah, I think it's definitely a good thing. It would be interesting to see, like, if you made a huge amount of seaweed on your garden, maybe you would, you know, get a little too salty. But I think the amount of rainfall would probably correct that.
Okay, so salt and pH, what is that? If it's too salty, it's...
Salty is alkaline, so the pH is going up. So we actually have kind of an interesting alkaline environment in our intertidal zones where we get these little plants like, what's it called? Arrow something, and all those little succulent plants like pickleweed. Those are actually kind of like desert plants, like what you might find in like a salt flat in Utah or something, because that's kind of our only real alkaline soil environment around here.
Okay, and the lime also raises the pH.
Yes. The difference being that calcium is a really important, much more of an important plant nutrient than salt. Than sodium. So calcium raises the pH, and an abundance of calcium is generally good for a lot of plants. In fact, over on like Prince of Wales, where they have limestone soil that has a rich amount of calcium, the biggest spruce in Alaska grew there before they were cut down. They were like Sitka spruce, 10 foot in diameter, because they grew on this calcium rich soil. The pH was more neutral and things really thrive in that.
Okay. All right, well, that's my questions for now. I guess I'll just keep listening. Thank you so much.
Yeah, keep adding the seaweed.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Thanks. Yeah, that was a good reminder about one of our most abundant local amendments, the seaweed. And I have some old family connections in Ireland. And years ago, I was visiting there on the coast of Western Ireland, a very similar climate to here, wet, rainy, cool, windy, not very good soil, lots of peat bogs, acidic soil, very rocky, very challenging conditions. And only about 100 years ago, most people there were subsistence farmers. And so my third cousin three times removed, elderly gentleman who was in his 80s when I was there over 10 years ago, he told me a story about back when he was a young man, and this would have been in the 30s maybe or 40s. At any rate, they would go down to the beach there to harvest seaweed in a donkey cart. And he told me that he got in a fist fight once with another young man over who had the right to harvest seaweed in that particular stretch of beach, because they were using the seaweed to build soil and fertilize their potato beds, which was what they lived on at that time in Western Ireland. And it was the seaweed, the kelp, to fertilize the potatoes was such a coveted resource that, you might get in a fistfight if you tried to harvest from the wrong patch of beach. So that was very illuminating on the value of seaweed when gardening in a cold, rainy climate. Yeah, well, I think that wraps it up for today. I'll be back next week with more discussions of gardening, with the unique challenges and possibilities of our wonderful, rainy, wet little corner of the world. And thanks, everybody. I'll be back next week.
Support for this program comes from Petersburg Flower Farm, with delivery of fresh bouquets available. Open noon to 5, Friday through Sunday at 6 Rory's Road. More information at 907-518-4363 or Petersburg Flower Farm on Facebook.